Skin and the Children for a War Drum. Written by Magnus Chases and read by Wilfriede 0815. Fandom, The Locked Tomb. Characters, John Gaius and Gideon Nav. Rating, teen and up audiences. No archive warnings apply. Additional tags, body horror, comes back wrong, just a lesbian, Jesus, and her dad, God. Summary. The person who was once Gideon Nav wakes up. Something's wrong. Hearing returned to her first. She could hear the muffled cursing and angry gnashing of jaws, and the squelch-squelch of flesh and blood, less knitting together than being roughly shoved, meshed together like a child with putty. She could hear that, but not feel it yet. She didn't know yet it was her own flesh. The sounds were doughy and thick, and it was probably good she couldn't feel anything yet, because they would likely make her vomit. Over time, her senses returned. It could have been 5 hours. It could have been 5 million years. She couldn't touch it, couldn't sense it anymore.
Dian, can you hear me?
The voice asked. She knew that voice. She remembered a joke it had made, but not the context or why it had been funny. Had it been funny? The voice sounded different to how it had last time, like she was hearing with a different set of ears or a different brain. She knew it, though. Something, a piercing hot knowledge, made itself known to her that she would remember this voice. Her chest felt like how her mouth had when she'd lost her baby teeth, normally to one of Harrow's fucked up misadventures. She wanted to rub her fist against it, to feel out the damage. It was right at her sternum, between her tits, and it hurt. Hurt so constantly she could forget about it sometimes, but it was always there.
"Fuck's happening?"
she muttered weakly. Her throat wasn't dry. Some necromancer had absolutely rehydrated it for her. She knew that because it felt weird and artificial, but it worked. It was just different. And strange, and wrong.
Shh, shh.
There was a hand in her hair, ruffling it up, tugging at the roots. She wanted to pet it away. She wasn't a damn dog to be petted and shushed. But her arms wouldn't work when she willed him to move and slap this motherfucker away. Her lungs heaved air in and out, converting oxygen to carbon dioxide, pushing her blood around her body, and she could feel it. She could feel every movement, knowingly, consciously. Her liver hurt. How could she know where her liver was? She barely knew what it was to start with, outside of her comics where people drank too much and complained about it. It pulsed down there, sure as her heartbeat. Where was her heart? How could she not feel her heart? Where was her heart? Where was it? Distantly, she became aware her breathing was speeding up to FTL, but she did nothing to stop it. Something else did. Slammed the brakes on them, her brain clattering out of its awful alignment.
Gideon, stop!
The voice was stronger, ethereal, inhuman, more than human. Human a bit to the left, with a spin. She blinked, and was promptly blinded. Eventually, her eyes adjusted to the light, and she could see where she was. A clean, white room, blinding and uncomfortable. The level of cleanliness made her feel naked and wrong. Well, she was basically naked here. There was a hospital gown thrown on her for decency's sake, but it didn't fit right and only covered her if she didn't move. And there was a man there with eyes that didn't fit his face. Eyes that could fit nobody's face. It wasn't like seeing Yanthe with Nabiris's eyes at the end of everything. It was so much worse than that. They were awful, and black, and impossible. The iris in the middle reminded her of the rings encircling the fourth house that she'd seen in pictures. The black sclera didn't even reflect light. It just swallowed it up, hungering and greedy. A reflection present on his iris disappeared as soon as it dared venture near those terrible sclera.
Good, you're awake. How are you feeling?
He had an affected tone of care that didn't quite convince her. She tried to answer, but just coughed instead, her chest heaving against her own commands, until it stopped a gasping second later, and the man looked apologetic.
"Minor hiccup, I'm afraid. Should be better now."
His accent was odd. It had none of the effects she'd heard from the third, or the military forthrightness from the second. It wasn't posh, or elocuted, or whinging like the house's signs and their calves had. Considering she'd never heard a voice like his before, it was incredibly common, like an artificial midpoint of accents. He was rather plain-looking, and she was starting to remember where she knew his awful eyes and voice from. Her memories from her time in Harrow's body were fuzzy, but returning all the time, becoming clearer like a cloth wiping a pane of glass over.
"Sore," she finally got out. "Empty."
Her jaw felt wrong and clicked every time she moved it. Her voice came out as a rasp, which she saw him take note of. Or maybe note what she said. She couldn't see the front of the tablet he was incessantly typing on. He touched her pulse point with a calloused finger. She could feel the blood move artificially, but it wasn't being pumped by anything. Anything she knew about, anyway. His fingers pinched her unpierced earlobes, twisting the skin, almost painfully. She was slightly afraid he was going to pull her ear off, and she was in no position to stop him if he did. The fingers moved over to her hair, curling a piece trailing below her ear, a length she'd never had before and wasn't keen to repeat. The second she got a chance, she was chopping it into a far more practical length. She could hardly fight with a two-hander, or even bounce around with a rapier's ridiculous footwork if her hair kept getting in her eyes and stopped her. Her hair was the only thing that didn't feel wrong, though. She hated the length, but she could feel it, and it was hers. It would still be that color that infuriated Harrow so much, when she was able to cut it back into a length appropriate for a cavalier, and in a style for a proper one, too. None of Nibiri's Jekhov hair gel styles that she believed physically impossible in her own opinion, and also made him look like a douche. Not that Tern had needed help being a douche. It seemed to be a third trait that had passed Coronabeth over along with necromancy. How long had it been since Kanan House? She'd lost track of time in Harrow's body, locked away in her wounded brain. Months, at least. And where was Harrow? Why hadn't she come to see her instead of this guy? The man in question spoke.
"Good morning, Kiriona," he finally said. "I'm so glad you finally woke up."
The end.